Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a Gundam Wing rewatch podcast that is an end result of birth. I'm Hugh.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Jason.
And I'm Spence.
And today we're watching episode 30, The Reunion with Relina.
And welcome back, Voltron guy.
Yes, he returns.
I was watching the subtitled version, and it's pretty great, like how the differences between the English dub and the actual subtitle translation, like it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like it is unintentional comedy.
Well, there are a few places where they made, especially in this episode, they made some critical decisions in translating that dialogue. But I think we'll get to that because I actually really welcomed the intro piece, although I must admit not every bit of footage in the supposed recap section struck me as something I'd seen before.
I felt the same way, so I'm glad that I wasn't the only one.
I'm not sure why we needed to see, like, Sally blow up that submarine again. Like, that was not a plot-relevant submarine.
Because it's awesome.
Because it's Sally Poe. Like, I mean,
fair.
But because the show is going to cram in any underwater robot fight it can manage for some reason.
They got to boost those Cancer and Pisces sales.
Yeah, they're not buying enough Cancer mobile kits.
Yeah.
Okay, so the actual opener of the show, though, is a little bit of forest combat. And I have to say, I swear I recognize that entire sequence from some VHS preview I can remember grinding out my parents' basement in the mid-90s. Like, I swear I saw that ahead of, Demon City Shinjuku or whatever.
Oh, man, you brought back some classics from Saturday anime there, buddy.
Yes.
But no, yeah, you're coming right. Like,
from ADV Media.
Oof. Y'all have lost me, but that's okay.
ADV is a long but forgotten anime distributor from the 90s and late 80s. They were rivals to manga. The best commercials ever. But you're right. I feel like this was probably some scenes they used when this was in syndication. Toonami's first go, and I'm pretty sure, like, in one of those TV spots you saw, like, the jungle action fighting to, you know, because back then the way they advertised anime was action, violence, more action, hey, there's robots, action.
Well, I also thought it was notable for this episode that although there is a fair amount of action in the opening, I didn't feel like it was animated in such a way as they were necessarily going to be reusing the same chunk of footage over and over again. And maybe we will see this forest fight again, but I felt like the animation quality was a little bit lowered, but with the intention that they would get more one-time use out of it. But I could be wrong.
You know, I think it'd be an interesting thing to look at the economy of, like, the animation industry, like, and how they go about, like, figuring out, well, we want to spend, you know, this amount of money on animation for this episode or this string of episodes, and we'll outsource the in-betweening to Korea for these episodes, you know, that type of stuff. Because it would explain, like, how they also kind of storyboard and kind of put together and direct the shows, because they'll be like, well, you know, we don't really need to focus on this section as much because we're not going to have that much, you know, animation budget behind it and so forth. Like, I think that'd be a really interesting thing. It'd probably be the most boring thing you could ever watch. Well, but I think it would still...
So it relates back to something that Disney historically has done, which is recycling filler animation sequences just with story appropriate characters, but like all the motions, all of the settings, all the choreography is the same. So, you know, I feel like that's probably along the same lines, just Disney did it like 40 years ago.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to see different robots like shoot in this way. Like, you do have the shot of like the slowly approaching line that they like to pull out here that I'm sure they've pulled out before with like other suits on a different background.
Yeah. In the snow, in the, yeah, absolutely.
Or in that, that one sequence where Wu Fei and Sally meet a few episodes back and he's questioning his ability to fight with them.
Right. With his gun. Right. We kind of tend to see Leo's all form this exact line and march towards each other a lot.
But I mean, if they're military trained, that is kind of very formal British hold the line kind of.
Yeah, I was about to say you have to remember they're basically all Napoleonic soldiers. So.
Yeah, and it's evocative of that era of warfare.
Yeah. Okay, so I do want to ask a question though, because we open with a bit of a combat sequence and there's a debate going on between Hiro and Catra, in which Hiro is kind of taking the side of we must fight, and Catra as kind of unspools throughout the episode as kind of the side on peace. Now, how did Hiro manage to wrangle himself into another military unit without any credentials and another giant robot to fight in?
Well, I think he just pretty much walked in and said, I'm a Gundam pilot, hire me.
And the Trace faction said, sure.
Like, yeah. They didn't even give him a uniform. He's just like, have this tank. I'm wearing this.
Connect to my network on LinkedIn.
I think it's partially because of how he won in the Zex battles. Those credentials probably helped.
Have we seen him do laundry? Just saying. Like,
no, he probably smells so bad.
You know what I'm saying? I know it's totally random, but he's worn that outfit forever.
They all have.
Does it not have holes in it?
I was kind of thinking the same thing, because Catra gets rained on and he just looks like a wet dog at one point. And I was like, yeah, that's probably got some space stank on it still. Like, none of these gentlemen have been bathing.
Like, I mean, the only one who might even have come close would be Troa, because Troa seems to, up until, you know, his vanishment, he was the only one that was actually in like an outfit. Like he was in the military kind of. Well, you know,
Duo, I think, had a little bit of a costume change when he was laying low on the space station.
He put a hat on.
He put a hat and a jacket on. We don't know if he took off his shirt and sent it to the launderers.
No, actually, I'm pretty sure he didn't, because remember he spent that money to go to that strip club drinking milk.
Oh yeah.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure that Catra just has like a closet full of identical vests.
Yeah.
He's got like 30 of those lilac vests. He just takes anyone out.
There's scientific evidence that leaders will reduce their decision making by having clothing that is all very similar, if not the same.
And you know what? To be fair, Catra is a leader of men. He's a leader of the Fez men, and he's the son of like a really, really, really rich like oil baron.
So yeah,
he's basically Zuckerberg before Zuckerberg.
Although I would prefer Catra over Zuckerberg any day, but you know.
Okay, so they have their little conversation, and it's clear that Catra's going one way and Hiro's going the other.
Yeah, we see Catra and sad in the rain on a cliff watching Hiro.
And this conversation is later paralleled. The same conversation is later paralleled by Relina and Dorothy's debate. I don't really know what's going on.
They're having a young leaders meeting, female leaders of the Sank Kingdom.
Literally every line that Dorothy delivers is sarcastic or a slightly veiled threat. Like, there is nothing else that she says. Nothing she says cannot be taken without a hint of sarcasm. Nice to meet you, Hiro Yui. And okay, can somebody explain to me why, again, it seems like this is really the girlfriend that Hiro should have had. Like, she's in the library hacking. She knows where it's at. She's got the Adobe Photoshop
but she's
up on the
also
screen.
Kind of a stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, my question was...
She's totally got, I now have a picture of you.
She's got a picture that she's printed and pinned to the wall of the school library. What is going on here?
Like I said, she's a stalker.
Yeah. Like,
she's putting together a vision board.
Like, what's great, though, is like... what's great, though, is when she says, like... When she says the thing she says to Relina, like, the whole class goes... Oh my God, is Relina's life in danger? Oh my God, oh my God. And Relina's just like, I don't agree with your opinions.
I will change them.
With total pacifism.
Okay, I'm sure someday we can figure out how to not kill each other.
Like
total pacifism.
I feel like the way that she says it, especially when she's talking to Pagan, is... I feel like I see her having Dorothy tied to a chair in like a Star Trek Next Generation with Picard going, there are four lights. I feel like it's going to be that kind of scenario. God, and then we're going to empathize with Dorothy.
I think there's just going to be like that circle of girls in the uniform are just going to like wrap around Dorothy and just be like, pacifism. Pacifism.
Aggressively hugging pacifism.
Like, you know what's really sad is that it kind of turns out that way.
No spoilers.
It's just that like the way it's starting to work in this episode is like people just start flocking to this concept with no analysis of if it's viable, how is just holding your hands in the air and saying total pacifism as they riddle you with bullets, like, how is that going to keep your family safe? Like,
well, listen.
Okay, so are we at the apple seller at this point? Because I have a lot to say about this apple seller guy.
You can take a break and talk about the apple seller that somehow has major influence on Katra's life.
Yeah, okay. Well, because we're totally going to have to come back to Miss Relina or Relina or whatever.
Yes.
We will return to that and this Warrior's Paradise. But yes, the apple seller. The old, I don't know, Italian man stereotype. Like, I didn't quite... That mustache I've seen
in Relina. I feel like this is sort of the thing that Wu Fei and Sally did in that restaurant. But, like, Katra just shows up late to it.
Yeah, she's like, I'm like, sorry, able to help.
Like,
Wu Fei would have kicked all those guys in the face already.
And then tell everybody that they're weak.
And he would have been like, if you're too weak to fight, you shouldn't be on the battlefield. Like, I just, and those poor apples, they abuse those apples. Like, what did those apples do to you?
I don't know. I think an interaction between Wu Fei and that guy would be pretty hilarious. If you're too weak, you shouldn't be on the battlefield. Well, that's great, because I don't want to be on the battlefield. Well, then you shouldn't be on the battlefield. I'm leaving right now.
The battlefield came to me.
And then Wu Fei would be like,
you're weak.
Good.
You're agreeing with me. I don't know how to respond.
Where's your local zoo? I need to yell at some animals.
I want to say I need to scare hyenas.
And we get a new mini boss this episode too. A uniformed.
I feel like whenever the show doesn't want to like commit to a character design, they're just like, put a guy in a military uniform and like big sunglasses, and it'll be fine.
We'll just assume he's like an 80s villain. It's fine. No,
okay, but did you listen? I know that you generally listen to the subversion, Hugh. Did you listen to the dub version at all with that character?
I did.
Oh, he has the best ridiculous, like, this is clearly an American. You know, you must understand he's American.
No, he sounded like a guy from Top Gun.
Yeah, it was the best.
Red one!
Yeah, it was like, Goose! Goose, what are you doing, Goose? Red one. Man.
But I was actually thinking of the other guy that they basically just introduced and slapped in a military uniform, who's talking to the mayor. He's in your standard sort of Roma feller.
Yeah, he's also in a generic uniform.
He's like a Slender Man. Green. Yeah, the typical "I don't eat enough and so I'm angry" kind of guy. Literally, that's what I think every time they bring out one of these stick figure men in a uniform. I'm like, oh, he doesn't eat enough. That's he's hangry. He's hangry, and this is why he wants all of this useless butt shit. Got it.
If he's the guy with apples, everything would be okay.
I did like the fact that the two opposing plans were: we don't need to evacuate town because we're going to stop them in the fields, and the other side is we're going to push them into the town because clearly the town will be evacuated.
I just, my thing is also like, who thought of these plans? Like, because obviously these aren't heroes' plans, because heroes' plans are like, we'll just slaughter everyone no matter what. And it's not like it's Catcher's plan, because Catcher would have been, you know, I think Catcher would have thought of some sort of like diversionary, like let's trick them to come over here type plan. Like, so what leader was like, I know how this is going to work. We're going to fight them in town if we don't stop them in the fields. So are we going to evacuate town? Did anybody give that evacuation order?
Yeah.
Ooh,
screw about the civilians.
Ooh, about that, sir.
Well, it was like the Tinkerbell weak spot, right? Like they needed to believe in themselves. So if they let the town evacuate, they were going to lose their morale.
And I like that Hero's like listening to those plans and he just looks so mad.
as opposed to when he looks happy, have you ever seen him look happy?
Well, he has laughed
after he chopped that plane in half.
He looked pretty smug,
and he also has laughed on several occasions due to murder.
Okay. Yeah. So, actually, speaking of, this is one of the episodes where, although he does it sort of with a combat maneuver. He does show some sort of compassion more than usual, where he decides he's going to sort of stick his position and guard the town because he realizes it hasn't been evacuated, directly contravening orders.
Yeah, he's like literally standing between a SAM battery and a church.
Yeah. Okay, but did he actually... I wanted to note, because he basically kicks a bunch of trash and then he takes a knee. Like, he didn't really seem to get hit. I don't know if we were missing an animation somewhere, but
he didn't get a direct hit, but the explosion of the bombs, I guess because these aren't actual Gundams, the ships can actually take battering damage, I must, and get,
yeah, he's in a Leo, so those things are like made of tin.
Okay.
Yeah. So like it's kind of like if you drop a toy enough, like it might just start walking around a little weird. Like it's not broken per se, but like, you know, you jostled some of the innards around a little bit, like,
yeah, the gears
shocks
are out of
line. No longer work.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, because remember, whenever he's in a Gundam, he's basically a god. Like he can take a nuclear bomb to the chest and be like, whatever. This is Gundanium, remember? It's magic metal.
Yeah, fair. So he takes a knee in the middle of combat, and then we flip back to the ongoing Miss Relena versus Relena debate. I will never call you Miss Relena, or Relena. It will always be Miss Relena. Like, is Miss really that high level?
In candidates.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a translation thing.
Yeah.
I'm just, like, I feel like they could have went with Princess Relena, and that would have made more sense to me.
Yeah, I feel like this debate is more or less Relena's trying to put Dorothy on her level, and Dorothy, because she's a sarcastic, snappy chick, is always trying to pointedly go after Relena and subvert her no matter what she's saying. Like, Relena's honestly being just like, no, just call me Relena, it's fine. And Dorothy's like, nah, no way. And I feel like it's just because of her spite. Like, she wants to be contradictory.
Well, I mean, like, she's like so over the top with it. She's like, That's so wonderful that you feel this way. And if everyone felt this way, if everyone was as wonderful as you, we wouldn't have war at all. And that would be wonderful.
Well, your wise opinions are also necessary in a war. Yeah, totally.
I think it's actually really smart because she is putting Relina up above her to make her appear of everybody else, all of the subordinates. So she can subvert the subordinates to her way of thinking because she is their peer, not Relina's peer. And it makes Relina look out of touch. So it's actually a super smart strategic move. Just saying.
And also she's swaying them to her side by like narrating the opening of a Fallout game. She's like, war. War never changes.
Yeah, her side is actually boils down to people love to fight. Like, she just says that at one point. Yeah. Well, I see your point for peace, but let's consider that people love to fight.
Yeah, she says to Relina, she goes, I've come to think this way because throughout history, humans have fought over and over again. And I thought at first that it was because we're different, but no, it's just human to fight. And so we have to fight because we're human. And Relina's like, no, I don't agree with that. And she's like, but it is history, Relina.
Also, like, I noticed for the first time that, like, Dorothy doesn't have any pupils.
No, she doesn't. She just has giant corneas. Just giant corneas.
She reminds like flat blue discs above her weird branching eyebrows.
Like she looks like she's from the whatchacallit clan from Naruto, the ones that have the Byakuya. They have these just big flat pale eyes like that. Like, and it's just no pupils whatsoever. So like, she just, like, I'm like, did Naruto watch this before they did their character design? Like, I don't know. But yeah, it's, I do like the symmetry between Catra and Hero's inner struggles with this and how they're contradictory to one another for a while, and how Relena and Dorothy are also that, they're that same thing, and it's just, instead of it being two soldiers, it's two civilians, and it's a lot of good symmetry throughout this whole thing, which is surprisingly complex for a show about giant smashy robots.
Actually, to loop back to something you were saying earlier about the difference between the sub and the dub, at one point Catra is trying to convince Hero not to go to the fight, and the sub says, Hero, don't do it, you'll basically demoralize yourself. And the sub said, you'll destroy yourself essentially by attempting to achieve this. And I thought that was an interesting choice in changing the word.
Like, when they brought this over, they had to do a thing where they had to like make a dub for daytime and a day for evening TV, because it was like one of the first Toonami Adult Swim sort of things. So, like, they really got a lot of use out of the word destroy in a lot of places.
Yeah, because destroy is basically the kid-friendly way of saying you'll kill yourself. Like, or you'll kill something or whatever. Like, if you want to keep something kid-friendly, quote-unquote, you say destroy. You don't say kill. And that's just kind of how you keep something from, like you said, if this comes on at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that's how you keep it from having to be on at 10 o'clock, you know?
Yeah. I just found it unfortunate that they sort of rounded that point so far, because it seemed to me it was more about, you know, you can fight Hero, but the civilians are still going to die or whatever it was. Because Catra is also sort of having that ongoing discussion with the old man who really wants him to join this church of total pacifism. So I the idea that it would demoralize and that the loss of life, or like no matter how hard he fought, there was still going to be an issue. It just seemed like a different thrust.
Now, here's a question. Has Catra met Relina at this point?
Not yet.
Nope.
That's what I was wondering, because he seems so unfamiliar with the Sanct Kingdom. And I was like, wait, did he or did he not? And then I had to think about it, because honestly, the only interactions with Relina that were had outside of Hero was with Duo. So as of right now, only Hiro and Duo have even met Relina.
Right. And so I really want Duo to meet Relina again because he is such a shameless flirt. It was amazing.
But that's because Duo is the god of death. I mean,
yeah.
He's got that ponytail and a hat. He's great.
I just want to braid his hair into all the fun different designs.
He also is Inspector Gadget with that freaking helicopter umbrella.
Thing. Yeah, totally. but you kind of hinted at it, but in his conversation, okay, actually, one of the things I really enjoyed was there's the fight going on, and then there's this sort of civilian convoy trying to get out of the way, and Catra's hanging out with them. He's hanging out with the old man, and he's like, why is everyone so chill?
And the old man's like, they're just tired of war. Like because they're exhausted by too much war,
yeah,
they just don't care anymore.
Like, Catra's like, all these people who've lost everything and have been forced out of their homes look so relaxed.
But no, it's
like,
just,
oh, you poor little rich boy.
They are tired. They've been rebuilt enough times. They are tired. They're going to try somewhere else, knowing that they may die getting away from
the war
field.
Yeah, I think the actual line for Catra was, all these soldiers are panicked, but the civilians are relaxed. And I'm like, what?
Because like the dude who like murdered half of the army in the wing isn't going to kill the civilians.
Yeah.
Like the thing they're freaking out about is the other general found out that there is a Gundam pilot on the field and is calling in the murder robots.
Yeah. Okay, a small technical point, but I found those flying shield discs oddly more viable in space. As soon as they were brought into like a gravity-based environment, for some reason I was like, nah.
Well, they're electromagnetic, so electromagnetism.
Yeah. My thing is like the way they designed them and had them animated, they're like floating and kind of flopping up and down, like they're spinning. And like, I'm like, they didn't do that in space where it would be probable that they would move around in such a way.
That would at least make more sense, yeah.
I was just going to say that actually lends itself more to magnetism, and it's fighting the Earth's gravity versus the magnetism to the suit itself.
You're trying to say the Gundam Wing has far more intricate knowledge of science than we give it credit for?
It is an alien robot. It
does have Lagrange points.
Yeah, I'll buy that for a dollar. okay, so while he's talking to the totally relaxed old man, Catra hears for the first time about the Sank Kingdom, which I guess he decides, hey, that's where the place to be.
Also, the old man, I can't remember if it's the old man or Catra who says that if the people who oppose war eventually outnumber the soldiers, then the soldiers will have no choice but to embrace peace.
I'm pretty sure that works, the Apple Settler.
Yeah. And I think there's a couple of flaws in that plan, mostly about who has guns.
Clearly, yeah. He has never played Risk.
Now here's a question. If Catra's the son of this like oil baron guy, and he's had this guerrilla war fighting Fez unit, how the hell does he not know about the Sanct Kingdom? Like, the Sanct Kingdom is famous for their total pacifism.
Well, his kingdom was separated from both Oz and the pacifists. If I recall correctly, because I just watched all of these episodes this past week, this was, you know, a long time ago. So it may not be part of his education as a leader. His education of leader may have been, okay, these are supply routes. This is combat. By the way, here's your giant freaking robot.
Yeah, but at the same time, royalty knows of royalty, you know?
But he left super young. Like, his sisters, yeah, I would assume that they would know all about it. But because he left without his father's permission, that probably has a lot to do with it. So his studies may have been cut off early.
Yeah, agreed. Like, I think that he probably had Sent Kingdom on his lesson plan, and that was one of the lesson days where he skipped school to pilot a giant robot.
he's like, I could go to history, but me and Sandrock are going to hang out today. My sentient robot that believes in space spirit, the spirit of space, the soul of space, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
God, soul of space. We get more Alfred, though. We get some great Alfred.
We do get some Poggin.
We do. And we get some Noin, but she's all... Man,
Noin has turned into Batman the Matchmaker.
Yes, yeah, but...
Hold on, before we go there, I want to talk about that sequence, because that whole discussion with Pagan is like, hey, guess what? Noin didn't want you to know about this, but we found Hiro Yui. Like, why did you even bring that up? The conversation before that had nothing to do with that. He's the worst secret keeper ever.
Well, he was. It came up tangentially because she was talking about. She was saying that Dorothy was still her very intelligent friend, and he was like, "Yo, you need to stay away from that chick. She's murder crazy," and she's like, "No, that's my friend." And he goes, "Well, look. I didn't want to tell you this. No one didn't want to say this, but we found Hiro Yui, and you need as many allies as possible." That's how worried about Dorothy he is. He's willing to let her get near the guy who is literally a sociopath before Dorothy.
So speaking of your murder crazy friends, I found your murder crazy boyfriend.
You need more murder in your life, so here's just a whole collection of murderers.
You can't get your hands dirty, so we're going to even it out by surrounding you with a bunch of murderers.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Yeah, that's bait. Like, honestly, like, I want to know, like, if that's how, like, pacifists throughout history have worked. Like, I'm going to hold on to this idea of true pacifism. Hey, I'm going to hire that bloodthirsty mercenary to kill all my enemies.
I think that's actually a historical thing. Like, all great peacekeepers of various sects, usually religious sects, have had a shadow hand that has done the dirty work.
I think it's very much a walk softly or speak softly and carry a big stick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Melina is speaking very softly, and, like, Hiro is the stick, and they're like, yeah, we need a stick for this girl, or else she's gonna die.
Despite all of these claims of total pacifism, though, it wasn't that long ago that Relena was threatening to burn this whole place to the ground, so this I guess we're just ignoring that.
Shot at somebody.
Total pacifism.
That's right, she did take those pot shots. I forgot.
But she's gonna stand for total pacifism until she dies.
Oh, man, I forgot about Assassin Relena. Oh, man. But, yeah, she did. And, you know, and I understand why Relena wants pacifism. Like, she has lost a lot because of this. But, lady, they got giant freaking robots. Like, that's no joke. Like,
well, yeah. It's interesting, though, that Spence brings up the notion of religion, because she does approach it like pacifism is a nut to be cracked, almost. Like, there's some hidden secret that she doesn't understand yet. It's not that she's, working out the math of pacifism. It's almost like she just hasn't... The way she speaks about it, it's almost like she hasn't achieved enlightenment, almost.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, I'm going to understand my dad's plan and how pacifism works. I just need to keep working at this puzzle cube.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of, that's also, you're right. It's very, I think that's also highlighted by how Dorothy talks to her. You know, I mean, yeah, she's a sarcastic twitch, but it's, oh, if everyone thought like you. And it kind of insinuates that Relena might be missing something because she's thinking in such a way, but yet no one's following her. Like, she hasn't achieved the pacifism she's talking about because of some missed connection, I guess.
Well, and, you know, now that I'm thinking about it and thinking about the apple seller and how he's speaking about it, it does sound a little bit like almost a cultist type belief system where they're saying, you know, if everybody subscribed to this, then there would be no war. And, you know, trying to, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it does sound kind of cultish.
Yeah.
Well, it's like pacifism is very revered in an almost holy sense. Like it's very pious in how they talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. and it gives it that lofty kind of feeling to it. And the fact that all these people, like the old man says, like their entire country sided with the Sankt Kingdom, and they don't have a reason why. Like, they don't, like, I don't feel like being tired of war is a good enough reason to be like, you know what? We're just going to up and move the entire country to this other country ruled by this teenage girl.
Well, on the flip side, though, to underline things almost, you have the situation going on where Dorothy and Relena are having this huge philosophical debate, and then you cut to Hero, who's still in the fight, and he's like, I'm going to fight longer than anybody. I'm even going to fight longer than Relena. And you're like, total pacifism, dude. She wouldn't be fighting at all. I don't think you understand how this works.
And
he's got like a big chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, and I want to know how he lives through this, because these mobile dolls wreck shop. Like, they don't mess around. But somehow, Hero is still alive and kicking, and he's only lost an arm in the Gundam, in the mobile suit. He's only lost an arm.
He lives through it because Catra shows up.
Is working overtime this episode.
Because Catra shows up, and then coming in the big blue spaceship is Noine with a giant laser gun.
The laser jet that really should be the front line of every scene. Like, why wouldn't you send in the laser jet first?
The laser cut through the weird shield thing like it was nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. And I said this earlier, but we have talked about this because they've used the laser ships before. Remember when Duo was faking to be a soldier and that girl came after him and they sent the laser ship after both Duo and the girl and it was wrecking shop with this little laser cannon. Like, it took
down
the
girl sacrificed herself so that Duo could get into the lunar base.
Yeah, we mentioned the power of the laser the laser nose of those ships back then. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, you're right. Like, why isn't every assault led with those lasers? Because like you said, it cuts through the mobile doll shields like it was nothing. Although, also, Catra punches one and it explodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Punch. Face, and it was pretty great, actually.
Like, and it wasn't even, it's not even like he was using the sand rock to punch it. It was just an Ares.
Although I do feel bad for that pilot because he threw that pilot 40 feet to the ground.
Yeah.
He's just like, well, I mean, they stole a battleship last show, so I've got to steal at least something.
Yeah,
sorry,
what
do
they do with that battleship? Because they don't seem to have it now. You think they would?
Where's the aircraft carrier?
You think it just left it in the harbor?
Yeah, it just ran into ground.
They gave it to the Trey's forces.
Could have used it to evacuate those town folk. Now that I think about
it,
yeah.
But no,
there could be all Age of Ultron up in there.
You also need to consider that entire sequence, though, because if you look at it from, like, the whole view, Catra's like, oh my god, I need to learn about total pacifism in the place that is total pacifism. I need to steal a war machine and get in a fight. Like, what? What?
They needed to rescue heroes so they could go together.
Again, and also, you have to remember, these guys are 14.
And also, this is, and also, he starts that whole chain of events by murdering that poor pilot.
Total pacifism. Sorry, dude. Boom.
What I do like in that scene is that we get the Trey's faction on this, like, grassy, like, World War I-ass hill. And, like, when we see the Virgo Downs, it's all, like, dead ground. Like, they've just, like, killed all life around them already.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens when you use a giant laser ship to burn everybody.
But yeah, and by the way, Noine, she's dressed to impress. Like, she's been doing all this Batmaning and spying and flying wearing that fabulous outfit. Like, she
You need your epaulettes for this.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to. It's strong. Like, you have to have a strong epaulette game or you're just not going to make it.
As strong as it is, I don't know. Yeah. As strong as it is, though, I don't know if it can make up for that end sequence. Oh, my God.
Okay, so even though she killed all of them with the laser, she still drops Hiro's Buster rifle.
That she forgot to change the setting from a straight beam rifle. She switched it over to laser shotgun.
Yeah, she set it so that all three of its like charges go off at once.
Mm-hmm. In a line, horizontally. Yep. But it's a slow burn, like, for some reason. Like, it's, like, peeling away at the shields and the armor. And, like, he's, like if it's that, it's that intensely powered and he's firing it, how is that area still standing?
It looks like it's a paint gun.
But, again, another sequence that probably featured ahead of Ninja Scroll at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
And then we cut to a different plane.
More like an airline carrier.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah, well, did she park and then, like, pick... Anyway, I don't know, whatever.
I mean...
It's time travel.
But they're at the Sank International Airport.
They were flight hopping.
Memorial Airport.
Yeah, because my thing is, was it the blue plane that she was...
She was like in Zex's X-Men jet.
Yeah, but isn't that the thing that she had the actual Wing Zero in the last time we saw her?
Yes. So that's probably parked in her secret Batman hangar.
Yeah.
So my thing is, why didn't she just drop the Wing Zero?
Because if she dropped the Wing Zero, there's no way Hiro would like show up in the kingdom. He'd just be like, oh, got my robot back. See ya.
Murder time.
He's like, listen, Relena is mixing with this terrible murder person, so I want her to see you because you're a less terrible murder person. At least you're upfront about it.
Yeah, don't invite me to your birthday party or I'll kill you.
Yeah, we want you to stand in front of the murder person and distract her while we get Relena out.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You've just hit on Noin's secret plan. She's trying to hook up Hiro and Dorothy. What it is.
See, this backfires, though, because he has Catra with him. And Dorothy fixates on Catra. It gets weird.
That's interesting. That is a little out of the field.
Is it going to be like a classic, these two should not have been together, but they end up together because the writers didn't want to disappoint the audience?
Honestly, I think most of the shipping in this show has been between all the boys.
Yeah, that's fair. But
if they made it out, I would not complain.
I'm pretty sure most ladies that watch this show wouldn't. And the fellas wouldn't care as long as there was some more smashy, smashy robots.
Yes.
Like, we need some Wu Fei and Duo action.
Oh, that's an interesting ship.
Yeah. Well, they were in a prison together and they were super bored. And then Wu Fei stopped his own breathing.
No, they were Somebody super bored, but they needed to, like, conserve their oxygen, so...
Yes, because they had all assigned themselves to death, including the doctors. But yet somehow, by the way, that line is great.
Somehow we survived this event again.
Even though they should have been probably sucked out into the vacuum of space, but whatever. Ah, Gundam Wing. So, Jared, you still not liking that in sequence, huh?
Oh no! You know what? I wasn't even talking about the animals. What I was actually talking about is there's this line again. This weird total dedication to Relena. Noin says something to the effect of, "Oh, I hope her smile makes it like obliterates all the pain we're about to experience." And then Hiro
Because Relaine is going to chew them out for bringing these, like, soldiers into the total pacifism kingdom. But at the same time, it's that girl that she wants to kill her, so she won't be too mad.
And Hero deplanes. He walks down the gangway, and Relaine gives the worst look. It's a two-part smirk. It is just awful. I hated that entire sequence.
Like, she smirks. Ooh. She puts her arm on, like, the handrail, on the railing, and then she like quirks her eyebrows,
like,
and
that.
She's like, hey,
like, as like the animation in this series, in this whole episode, has been not like supremely good, but it hasn't been bad. Like, we've seen far worse until Relaine's face at the end of this episode. Holy God, that is the worst animation in this entire episode. Oh God, like, perspective is just weird. Like, the eyes are just misshapen. Like, and I know what they were trying to go for, like you said, when smug Relaine is smug, but good God. Oof.
Her left eye does kind of wander out there a little bit.
It's just, oh my gosh. Like, it's just...
Well, maybe Hero likes that. We don't know.
Well, I mean, what's worse? If you saw, like, if you made Dorothy real with her eyes the way they are, and then you had Relaine do that look at you, who was more horrifying?
Okay, so it's not that her left eye is smaller than the other, it's that, like, the right eye is that much farther away. Relaine is 2 miles long. It's just a change of perspective.
Like, so, like I said, like, you get that face for, you get that face from Relaine, and then you get Dorothy with no pupils. So who's more terrifying? Yeah. Who's more terrifying?
Dorothy's a robot. She is a mobile doll.
I wouldn't put it past the show. Like, legit, like, you just see somebody get shot and then they stand back up and they're like
Terminator style, you know?
Yeah.
Half the face is gone and you see the Gundanium metal skeleton.
Oh man, at the end of the series, like, they finish the war, but Dorothy's still alive, and then they're like, so what are you gonna do now? She's like, there's one more chip, and then she, like, walks into a volcano.
Yeah.
There's still Gundanium left. She, like, walks into the, she, like, walks into the volcano. I'd watch that. I'd watch a Terminator.
Well, she just, like, walks into the volcano like Ashram in Lotus War.
Yes! Because they've gotten rid of all the weapons and they've achieved total pacifism, but the one symbol of war still exists, and that's the Gundanium in Dorothy's robot body. Gotta get rid of it, yo. I'd watch that. I'd watch the hell out of that, actually.
Because Terminator was terrible.
Oof. Oof.
You're welcome.
Oof. Oof. That hurts my heart. Mm.
It's all right. We'll talk about it off the show.
You didn't like not even Judgment Day? Terminator 2?
No.
Wow. Man. All kinds of reveals today. We'll have to see if we can achieve total pacifism.
I believe it with all of my whatever.
Because you don't have a heart?
As long as I'm alive.
As long as I'm alive.
Fight for total pass. Well, that doesn't sound right.
Screw it. I'm going to burn this place to the ground.
Okay, so are we on favorite parts of the episode?
Sure.
Okay, Spence, what was your favorite part of episode 30 of Gundam Wing?
Sorry, dude. Whoop! I need this. I need this mobile doll.
Yes, you mean Catra's, I'm taking this Ares. Bye, guy.
Bye, guy.
Oh, that guy's so, like, I would love to go back through here and take a count of how many people are just casually murdered. Like, not, like, in battle or, like, assassinated, but through just, the acts.
You're in my way, and so you're dead.
Yeah, yeah. It would start with those two ambulance drivers, and I'm sure we have a count close to 100 by now.
We're at episode 30, and it's one or two per episode. So, yeah, probably.
Yeah. I mean, would we count that kid? I mean, that Trace was going to let drown?
No, well, he survived, so He doesn't count.
Not technically a kill count.
Made it through his lone wolf and cub moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Love lone wolf and cub. I got to say my favorite part is Dorothy, again, with her line of, Verlina, you shouldn't be afraid. You shouldn't fear death. Death is the end result given to us at birth. Like, I just... like, Jesus. Like, if she wasn't so sarcastic, like, it might be an actual, like, inquisitive line. But because she's so sarcastic and catty, you're just like, eeh.
Yeah, some of the stuff she says could be delivered in True Detective Season 1. Like, that could be a rusty... Time is a flat circle and death is inevitable. Get over it.
Oh, man. True Detective Season 4. Relina and Dorothy.
I think Matthew McConaughey would be a good Dorothy.
All right.
Oh, my God. And they're in high school, too? Oh, God.
Okay, to steer the conversation out of this descent, I want to bring up something we've discussed far too little this episode, which is the inexplicable American commander. Now, Yes. Even if you didn't listen to this with the dub with the over-the-top accent, you have to admit that the Napoleonic era uniforms do not go with aviator shades.
But wasn't he wearing he was wearing a beret too, wasn't he?
Oh, I don't even... I was so distracted by the sunglasses that I did not make it past that. It felt like one of his recreationist buddies were about to dock him marks for a lack of realism. Totally my favorite thing this episode. That's all.
So you never catch trays in aviators.
And then, Hugh, what was your favorite part?
My favorite part was when they were getting ready for that fight and the one team is like walking across a field of wheat, but the other team is like crouching in high grass under nets. And it's clearly supposed to be grass because you see it in the foreground, but it's never established how tall it is because these are 40 meter giant robots.
And where it all disappears to immediately afterwards.
Right. Can grass get that tall? Like that's like trying to say you're gonna hide a Mack truck in a hayfield. I don't know
how they did this shot, but sure.
You know, but hey, you know what? At least with things like Eighth and S Team and stuff like that, where they have the ground based combat, they're in jungles and forested areas, so you can kind of say you're gonna hide these robots amongst them. Not in open fields, though.
Yeah, MSA theme is definitely the Vietnam to this, you know, World War One, World War Two kind of vibe. Mostly one, but occasionally a little hit of two.
Yeah, because we do have our space Nazis, so. Sort of. I think that's more, yeah, you're right. That's more core. That was actually probably more core, like Mobile Suit with the Zion and all that, and Char. But yeah, it's Gundam Wing. Episode 30.
Excellent. So that was Gundam Wing episode 30. You can find me at hughjodonnell.com.
You can find me over at skinner.fm.
Find me at talknerdytomepodcast.com.
And you can find me at resonantmoon.com.
And you can join us next week when we're talking about episode 31, The Glass Kingdom, which we'll be talking about the uniform that Relina puts Hiro and Catra in that has an incredibly high cravat.
So see, she was like, Hiro, you smell, here are some new clothes.
Total passivism.